Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Sing along. We're all Islamists now. Welcome to the New World Order of Barack Hussein Obama. We're all in love with the Arab Spring. We all live in one big yellow submarine. Don't you understand how it's working yet? Brzezinski, Carter, Susan Rice. Let me get louder. They can't hear me in it. Can I tell you a... That's what I wanted to hear. Now, the reason I'm playing this is to get your attention, and I had a dream last night. I know I should be talking about the earthquake and that Obama caused it, or that the earthquake was caused by Bonnie Frank or whatever, but I'm not going to do that immediately. I was shocked to see that the entire country went into some kind of hysteria over a nun event. Not one brick fell. No one was injured, thank God. Nothing broke. But they called out the National Guard, apparently, DHS. Arrested. I mean, they're crazy. Okay, the country's a nation of ninnies. You talk about a nanny state. I would call this a ninny state. Cowards, punks, yellow bellies. I've never seen anything like it. An earthquake that did nothing and the whole country shuts down. Dulles shuts down. JFK shuts down. Government workers are released. Well, and by the way, the government workers were released. Did anything stop in America when the government workers went on strike? Remember a couple of years ago? They were laid off, rather. And so far as I know, not one service was affected because none of us use the government services, just to show you how important it really is. But the reason I'm playing the Yellow Submarine song in the Savage Nation is because I had an astounding dream last night, during which I kept hearing Yellow Submarine, and I don't listen to the Beatles. I don't know why. May I tell you my dream? May I share it with you? Because I know it's of some interest to approximately 0.001% of the audience. Therefore, I must feed that demographic. And here it was. I'm listening in my dream. Yellow Submarine is playing. There's an Egyptian scene. There's sort of an ancient tomb of some type. And on the tomb, there's a pharaonic image of a woman seated, a seated woman. And a live woman walks next to it or is led next to it by invisible hands. And she is asked to sit down on a bench, which kind of parallels the silhouette that was carved into the tomb. And her figure matches the silhouette carved into the tomb perfectly. And she is immediately brought into the next world by whoever controls the next world. I would say God pulls her to the next world. Next, it is my turn. Invisible hands are pulling me forward. I'm not resisting. I'm just being pushed forward to the tomb. And my silhouette is on that tomb. And it matches. And I feel myself being pulled into the next world. And I start to scream, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. No, I'm not ready to go. I want to be here for my family and my children. I had a fight with all of my inner power. This is all while I'm sleeping, to not be pulled into the next world. So you say to yourself, well, what is this? Why is he telling us all of this? I have no idea why I shouldn't tell you all of this. Because the man and the show are one. The man and the show are one. This is the man you're listening to, Michael Savage. And the fact of the matter is, I have very profound dreams, which I have trained myself not only to remember, but to analyze the next day. Moreover, the reason I dream in color is because I take large doses of pyridoxine or vitamin B6, which will give you vivid dreams. And many people are afraid of their subconscious, which is why they drug themselves to death and take vacations and play golf. It's because they fear their inner self. They fear their inner mind. They've been taught not to listen to that still small voice within their own head. While I, on the other hand, have been training myself to not only listen to the still small voice, but to turn it into a talk radio show. So what do you want to talk about? There's so much to talk about. I mean, Obama's golfing and there's an earthquake and they try to get him on the links and the idiots on MSNBC are asking, oh, we are curious to know if the president felt the earthquake while playing golf, but we have no answers to that right now. Did the king of America feel the earthquake while he was golfing? I'm not making this up. Listen to click one.
I didn't personally feel the earthquake. I looked up, though, and I saw some chandelier shaking. Lasted for about 10 seconds. I want to stress it was pretty mild, so we don't have any reports of any injuries or any major damage or anything like that. We're curious, of course, to know if the president himself felt it while he was playing golf. We don't know the answer to that right now.
Well, that's investigative reporting. What do you mean we are curious? I mean, because you're a dingbat, you're curious? I'm not curious if he felt it while playing golf. What do you mean you're curious? What do you mean we're curious? I'm not curious if he felt it while playing golf. Not at all, by the way. Not at all curious as to whether or not he felt it while playing golf. So here we are. It's a crazy day out there. It's just nuts. Then, of course, my favorite gal, Andrea Mitchell. I mean, what would an opening be without playing this incredible human being, one of the finest of women, greater than Martha Washington and Marie Curie together? I mean, Andrea Mitchell, listen to this one in clip five.
I've never felt anything like this. We're all safe. We're outside. We were on the air, as you know, and everything started shaking. The desk, the cameras, the floor, everything around me. And you know what?
So in other words, Obama spoke and the earth moved under your feet. Is that it? It sounds like Obama must have called her from the links. And so the earth moved under her feet. I mean, that was that one. Unbelievable to me. Gaddafi flees Tripoli with family. Guerrilla and or tribal warfare feared next. That is not coming from Anderson Cooper. He's interested in the style jeans that the rebels are wearing and what size they are and where they buy them. And can he get a pair to bring back to West Hollywood? Gaddafi flees Tripoli with family. Guerrilla and or tribal warfare feared next. Gaddafi family and elite are reported by Debka Files military sources to have abandoned their Bab al-Aziziya fortress early today, using Saif al-Islam's surreal appearance before foreign reporters earlier in the day to cover their escape. They are believed to have exited the compound through one of the underground tunnels of the compound's military complex, but regional intelligence experts are frankly baffled by the enigma of the overnight disappearance without a trace of Gaddafi's army divisions. More to follow on the Savage Nation. Here's another story for your listening pleasure. Air rage businessman threatened to stab British Airways pilots after being refused alcohol. That's the New Britain, of course. They're famous for puking on car fenders and getting into fights on airplanes or outside pubs. But to defend their nation, there's no one to be seen. A so-called U.S. businessman who went into a drunken rage on board a transatlantic flight to the U.K. was arrested after allegedly threatening to stab the pilots with a shard of glass. Petrified passengers claim 32-year-old Tom Bradley was drinking large quantities of wine and beer before raving at passengers and attacking staff. First of all, never mix the grape and the grain. That's the first thing I can tell you. He was traveling in business class from Phoenix, Arizona to Heathrow on a BA 747, but exploded with rage after being refused more alk by flight attendants. He then allegedly assaulted a senior member of the cabin crew by pushing him into the galley and demanding to know why he was not allowed any more booze. There's a little follow-up to that story that I must read to you. This is a cute side note to that story. Last week, a holidaymaker, only the British could come up with a word like that, a holidaymaker? A holidaymaker? They make it sound like it's a job category. Last week, a holidaymaker, that's so socialist. Last week, a holidaymaker narrowly avoided jail after she bit, kicked, and punched two flight attendants when she went berserk on a delayed flight. Now, here's the rest of the story. Charity worker Carol Close, charity worker, emphasis on charity worker. In other words, she's a good liberal. Okay, charity worker Carol Close became so abusive that her husband and then passenger sitting nearby had to move for their own safety. She twice had to be forcibly restrained and put in handcuffs. The 45-year-old flew into a rage during a Thompson Airways flight from Manchester to the Dominican Republic. Now here comes the last kicker. She suffers from anxiety and depression, which had been made worse by a 30-hour delay and then a technical hitch once passengers had boarded. She suffers from anxiety and depression, so why is she flying? They wanted to accommodate her insanity? If she suffers from anxiety and depression, why is this mental case on an airplane? Why does she just stay home and knit? What is she doing in the Dominican Republic anyway, a charity worker? Eventually, the pilot became so concerned that he issued a mayday call asking to make an emergency landing in Bermuda. What do you mean mayday? Just strap it to a chair like you would with a man. There it is. Charity worker goes crazy, becomes abusive, and they won't even strap. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, they did put her in handcuffs. I see. Okay. 1-800-449-8255. We do have Anderson Cooper on the situation in Libya. Let's listen to clip six.
Muammar Gaddafi, as you know, took power in a coup back in 69. For a lot of Libyans, his brutal, often eccentric...
Oh, shut up and get off my show, you disgusting wretch of a human being. Get off my show, you freak. You're the one who caused the Arab Spring by making it sound like it's something wonderful for the world. If it was me, I'd try you for war crimes, personally, for what you've done to this country. But, okay, I have no power. I don't own Comcast. Where is everyone? Are you listening to this show? You're tuning into someone who's talking about the earthquake like something happened. Nothing happened, Schmendrick. Nothing. There's nothing. Nothing happened. There was an earthquake, and the whole world went into a hissy fit. Where's this one about STDs amongst the elderly in Miami? Here. Medicare may pay for STD screenings for seniors. This is astounding. Here we have a bankrupt nation. Here we have a busted Medicare system. And here we have the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services proposing that they pick up the tab to screen the elderly for sexually transmitted diseases. Though the final decision won't be made until November, the federal health care agency that covers about 40 million seniors will announce a draft recommendation Wednesday. Geriatric physicians say it's about time. The belief that seniors are not sexually active and therefore not likely to contract STDs is a misconception, says Noshira Pandya. Noshira, I hope I'm not mispronouncing a name. It sounds like Nasha Panda. But actually, it's Noshira, Nausea Pandya, chair of the so-called Department of Geriatrics at so-called Nova Southeast University in so-called Florida. The genius said, we need to start paying attention to the sexual health of seniors. So now they want to start screening elders over 65 for STDs. Even though in Miami-Dade County, reported STDs in those people 65 years and older have actually gone down in the past 3 years. 70 STDs in 08, 46 in 09, and 53 in 2010. In the same age group, Broward County had 32 reported cases of SIF, chlamydia, and gonorrhea in 08, but 30 cases in 2010. So studies show that the elderly are having sex well into their 80s and 90s. And doctors say it's not just because of the availability of erectile dysfunction drugs. Societal changes have made sex after 65 more acceptable. So it's interesting to me that they report on this, but they don't break it down ethnically, which they do for everything else in the world. Is that because whites are underrepresented in this, or is it that they're overrepresented? I mean, why do you suppose they're not reporting what percent of STDs in those 65 and over are amongst Caucasians and the other ethnic groups? Why is that? Is it because whites are underrepresented or because they're overrepresented and they don't want to embarrass whites? I'll let you figure that one out. Play We Are in This Yellow Submarine, would you please? I've given them enough to start already. If they're not interested, I can't help it. Let's hear the yellow.
We all live in a yellow submarine.
Submarine.
Yellow Woo! Submarine. Yellow submarine. Woo! We all live in a yellow submarine. Yellow submarine.
What do you think about my dream? Is there a dream interpreter out there? Does anyone actually believe this story is true? Because it's 100% true. Who was the woman who was taken to the next world? I don't know who it was, but someone died last night, and I saw her going to the next world. She was brought to the tomb. She fit and disappeared, like, into a fifth dimension. Then I was brought there, and my silhouette fit, and I said, I'm not going. I won't go. I refuse to go. And I screamed, I want to see my children. I want to see my children. I want to be here for my children. I swear to God, don't you think... I'm talking to you really like you're a friend of mine in a cafe right now because it shattered me. The dream really shook me up. Do you actually think that we could die in our sleep unless we fight? Unless we fight those forces that want to take us to the next world? And that leads me to the next supposition, which is that, in fact, unless you're tuned into your subconscious, you have no control over your destiny. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We met in a dream. Mm-hmm. You walked by my side.
Is this Johnny Ray?
And there in that dream.
Who was big in those days? Monty Clift.
wide.
Monty Cliff. Who else was around? Who cares? Who's that guy in the... No one remembers anything. I'm just drifting off here. So now we have another African-American congresswoman saying the real enemy is the Tea Party. This is Representative Federica Wilson, D. Florida, said in a Miami town hall with constituents. She says, let us remember who the real enemy is. The real enemy is the Tea Party. The Tea Party holds the Congress hostage. So why is it that the African-American liberals are targeting the middle class of America, who is the Tea Party? Remember who the Tea Party is. The Tea Parties, by the way, are grassroots individuals. There's no organized, simple, single Tea Party, as these demagogues of the communist left would have you believe. These leeches of the welfare state who have come to power simply by pandering to those who produce nothing for society and take without giving. See the real enemy as being you, the taxpayer, the business owner. Now, why are we seeing people like Maxine Waters and Federica Wilson targeting the Tea Party all of a sudden? Are they trying to stir up the masses of the unemployed, the masses of the folks on the bottom to riot? Are they trying to stir up a race war? Anyway, whatever. Trinity in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi.
Hello. Trinity, go ahead. You're on the radio. Talk.
Yeah, hi there. How are you?
Please, hey, tell me what's on your mind.
Yes, I wanted to talk to you about your dream.
Well, go ahead.
You were asking who this woman in your dream was, and I'm suggesting that she is the feminine aspect of yourself.
So wait, my anima died last night? God took my anima?
I don't think she died. I think she was being ushered into another dimension. I don't necessarily think that your attempt at then being ushered after her was to take your physical body and to have a physical death, but perhaps to take you into the next dimension, provide information for you to bring back to this dimension.
Wow, I guess I didn't drink enough last night. I only had one beer. I just decided to drink less. Are you a dream worker, Trinity?
I am.
Stay on the line. I want to talk with you.
Savage.
All right, so there's a mix of topics on America's favorite talk show, The Savage Nation. By the way, I've been in business since 1994 on talk radio. This is the third largest radio show in America. And it's on every day in this hour, in case you just tuned in. Some people say they never heard it before. I can't believe that, but that's the way it is. And I've been talking about the earthquake that caused no damage, no one injured, yet the media went into hysteria. The government practically shut down, and they won't stop yakking about nothing. We are talking about another black congresswoman railing against the Tea Party, calling them the real enemy, which is astounding to me because it seems like they want to stir up a race war. To me, it does. I cannot believe they would call the Tea Party the real enemy when the Tea Party consists of tax-paying, usually business owners. I do not know the demographics of Tea Parties in America, but my guess is, by what I've seen, nobody on welfare is a member of a Tea Party calling for less government spending. My guess is that those on welfare hate the Tea Party people, because they are the people who provide the taxes. The people in the Tea Party actually provide the taxes for the deadbeats, the leeches of society. And so now they're saying it's a war because you want to cut back. You hear this on spending. And Obama is the spender in chief. It's an interesting subject. I also introduced the topic of Medicare may pay for STD screenings for seniors over 65. Apparently that's a new problem, to go along with diabetes. I mean, my day, a grandfather had diabetes. Now what, he has chlamydia? How does this happen? Do you know anyone over 65 who has an STD? I don't. I've never heard of anybody. 1-800-44. And the air rage we talked about. And then I talked about a dream I had last night. And we have a dream interpreter on the phone. Trinity from Sacramento, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Trinity.
Hi there.
Trinity, yeah. So yeah. What makes you able to interpret dreams?
I'm working on my master's degree right now. I'm just finishing up my master's in consciousness and transformative studies, and I'm specializing in dream work.
But what's your bachelor's degree in?
Accounting.
No, no, don't laugh. I understand. You made a career shift. So you went into this field because what? You're an intuitive type of personality?
Yes, absolutely.
Would you say that you come from a would you say you come from a family of women who could see around corners, so to speak?
You know, we didn't talk about my family didn't talk about it much. So, no, I don't come from a whole family of that. It's just been my own gift.
As a child, were you able to see things others couldn't see?
Yes.
In what way? Give me an example, if you don't mind.
Oh, probably when I was 9 years old, I saw a guardian in my hallway, a man in all black. And, you know, it was quite scary at first until I realized he was there to protect me. He wasn't there to harm me.
But today they would declare that that's schizophrenia probably and put you on drugs.
Fortunately, all those medications weren't available back then.
Thank God, right? The quacks didn't yet declare any vision. Because today the quacks declare any vision a disease, you understand that. The same way they made childbirth into an illness in order to turn women into patients who were just giving birth, they have now declared any vision a disease, a mental disorder, in order to make sure you can be drugged and possibly institutionalized. So how do you really learn how to interpret dreams?
By doing it, by practice, by working with people. I work in groups and I work individually.
Okay, and one last note. I mean, my doctorate is in nutrition from the University of California at Berkeley from 1978, and I've worked in the herbal and nutrition field for many, many years. You should remember this if we never speak again or whatever. Vitamin B6, pyridoxine, produces vivid dreams in color for individuals. I don't know if you know that. It's a very little-known fact.
No, I am familiar with that, and I have used that and some of my
That's interesting. So that's become – that knowledge has now become part of the mainstream knowledge and people in your field. That's good, because that was originally written by Carl Pfeiffer in the 70s.
Yeah. No, that and, you know, some of us make teas as well.
Teas?
I don't know if you used mugwort or woodworm.
Well, woodworm is a very hallucinogenic herb, absolutely. That's what... we should warn you that wormwood can also cause hallucinations that are of no benefit whatsoever in high doses. So you think my dream indicates that the female within me was being led to the next dimension? Not so much to remove me from life, but to instruct me?
Right. I don't necessarily think that the death was a literal death the way you were perceiving it. I think it's more of a metaphorical death of this level of consciousness, especially your dream began with, I believe you said the Yellow Submarine song, you know,
yes.
To get your attention in this sort of musical, creative way.
Oh, but I never listened to the Beatles. Why would We All Live in a Yellow Submarine pop up in my head?
Well, I think often our dreams are there to surprise us, to grab our attention, to capture us. So something that you're not familiar with is bound to grab your attention more than something you're familiar with.
Actually, I do remember why We Are All Live in a Yellow Submarine came up. I was thinking of Libya and the politics of the Middle East and all the raging infernos going on around the world and all the different cultures and how cultures are clashing against one another and coming in contact with one another in ways we've never seen before historically in terms of the frequency of interactions between people of different cultures. And I the dream at first was I have to go on the radio and tell people that they have to be accepting of strange cultures because they're here and they're not going away. And the multiculturalists have destroyed America by jamming cultures that are foreign, truthfully, and alien to our way of life down our throats. It's failed in Britain. It's failed in France. It's failing in America because never before in history have those not learned when in Rome do as the Romans do. They now want the Romans to do as they did in their third world countries. Although they have fled their hellholes, they come here and tell us we have to live their way. So I was going to say that, and then the next thing it segues into this dream.
Hmm.
Yep. I know politically you probably don't accept what I just said because you're young, and if you're not a liberal at 20, you have no heart, and if you're still a liberal at 40, you have no mind. That's an old adage that makes sense only after you're 40. Anyway, you're a good sport, and I appreciate your calling the show, Trinity. Keep in touch. Thank you very much. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. MichaelSavage.com. Do we have Representative Frederica Wilson? Let's hear her.
While we discuss our very real concerns, let us all remember who the real enemy is. And the real enemy is the Tea Party.
All right.
Okay, this is a black congresswoman, Representative Frederica Wilson, who likes big hats, Democrat, of course, at a Miami town hall with so-called constituents, who said the real enemy is the Tea Party. How do you like that for getting along? So now you have Maxine Waters saying the real enemy is the Tea Party. You have this one saying, Representative Frederica Wilson saying the real enemy is the Tea Party. What I want to remind you people, the Tea Parties in this country are composed primarily of business owners and of taxpayers. So far as I know, Tea Parties are not made up of welfare recipients or other leeches in this country, in plain English. And why they would be saying this right now, Wilson, the other Maxine Waters, what are they trying to stir up, some kind of race war in this country? This is a shocking thing to be watching in my eyes, right in front of my eyes, truthfully. Joyce in New York, WOR, we have somebody on the Dream. Joyce, go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Savage. I'm delighted to be on your show. And a couple of months ago, I heard you describe a dream where you were singing in the streets. And I was almost going to call them because I realized that I could interpret that dream. And that dream is that you are a messenger and that you have something to say. The dream that you just had is the Eastern symbolism is the current condition of the world. The lady that you saw leave before you is America.
Mm.
And the reason you don't want to go is because you're the last voice standing.
Oh, my God. What an interpretation that is. In other words, America's life has been sucked out of her by the imagery was very, very clear. It was an Egyptian tomb, and it was of a seated woman, as you would see in, you know what I'm saying, Egyptian pictograms from Egypt, ancient Egypt. They always showed seated individuals, or very often they showed them seated, right, in an L-shape type of thing, like body, legs. And then she was brought next to that image, superimposed on the image. She fit perfectly, and they sucked her into it. I think that is the Arab Spring destroying America. In other words, this Arab Spring that we are being sold as the one of the greatest lies in history, it was orchestrated by Jimmy Carter, Brzezinski, and those in a think tank funded by George Soros. It was documented in a 16-page essay that I wrote about a year ago. They were behind the overthrow of Mubarak and what is going on in the Middle East. Now, what is it that they're doing? Are they trying to destroy America knowingly or by accident? Just remember, it was Jimmy Carter who overthrew the Shah of Iran and in so doing brought back Ayatollah Khomeini, who was an exile in France, and that started the disease, the virus, the AIDS virus of societies across the world. Radical Islam was stirred up by Ayatollah Khomeini, and it was a result of Jimmy Carter's do-gooderness. Either Jimmy Carter didn't know this would happen, he did it because he thought the Iranian people were suffering from Savak, he didn't know that the Muslim terrorists who would take over the country were worse than Savak, the secret police. In other words, the Islamic fanatic secret police are worse than Savak. So now we see the same thing going on in Libya, going on in Egypt. And this country is being sucked into this by the media. So are you saying that's Lady Liberty being sucked into that vortex and I resisted going?
Yes, I am. And especially when you said that she went and she conformed. And that's America.
Well, she conformed to the image that the silhouette was just exactly in her dimensions is the point.
Yes.
She tried it on for size. They brought her next to the size and she fit and then she disappeared. Invisible hands pulled her into that next world. And then I remember being led there by invisible hands, or forces, rather. And I knew they wanted me to go. I wouldn't go. And I screamed, no, I'm not going. I would scream with everything in me. I'm staying here for my children. I'm staying here for my children. So you're saying I'm staying here to fight for America, for my children?
You're staying here for us. You're the last voice standing. And
I can't say I'm the last voice. Why would you say the last voice? There are others who do the same thing, don't they?
Yes.
They don't do it the same way, but I mean...
I don't think so. I don't think that they do it with your integrity. I'm one of the Tea Party people in America and proud of it, and I'm a hardworking former business owner, taxpayer, and I've listened to your show, and I get a tremendous thrill out of a lot of things. We share the same spiritual beliefs, and I've been very drawn to call you and tell you about your dreams. And when I say the last voice, you're an authentic voice, and you are your own man. And there's so very few today that are representative of their own independent thinking, that aren't their thoughts and ideas aren't being conformed by some other outside force. And I think,
Joyce, what do you currently do professionally?
I'm a food service director.
Food, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. To me, food is not disconnected from the mind. It's very much one and the same. Joyce, you know, I'd like to get into an email correspondence with you. Would you be interested in that?
Very much so, Mr. Savage.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. First of all, I'm going to give you a gift of my new novel coming out in a few weeks, Abuse of Power. So you'll get that. We'll get your name. And then, guys, send me Joyce's email address, and she and I will start a correspondence, okay? Pretty stirring. And I really apologize to the earlier young lady who called with the dream interpretation. I meant to send her a free book as well. I did want to do that. 1-800-449-8255. Let's talk about the elderly and STDs, because that's another interesting. Oh, wait, I don't believe this. Steve in Sacramento, I got to take your call. Go ahead, please. Steve, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. I think the portal in your dream represents an airplane door, and the invisible hands are that of all of your family who want you to take that trip to Sardinia, and simply you just want to stay home and take care of Teddy and Tasha.
Oh, that's so prosaic. I love it. It makes me feel better. I'm not having to carry the world on my shoulders.
Well, and then God in the dream is saying, don't worry, Mike. Your family I will keep your family safe while they're away. And there might be some.
That is amazing. Well, come on, it can't be the trip to Sardinia, because the imagery was so clearly Egyptian. And that's number one. It had nothing to do with Sardinia. There was no imagery from Sardinia. It was clearly Egyptian symbolism, number one. Number two, I didn't say I want to stay home to take care of my dog. I screamed to the invisible forces in my subconscious, no, you can't take me. I want to see my children. I want to see my children. And I remember thinking while I was doing it, Steve, that I have read of people who were being sucked into the next world in some while their life was being, hanging in the balance. And the thing that pulled them back from the other side was their children, that they wanted to stay here for their children. So as much as I would like to take the lightweight view that you have presented, I can't accept that. I really can't. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Amazing how this topic has attracted the attention of many listeners. You never know in talk radio whether a topic is going to grip people or not. And it's, strangely enough, disproportionately women who are calling, because women are more intuitive than men generally, I think. I am an unusual individual in that I've always had a very high degree of intuitive ability. I've also had the ability to read my subconscious, because I've trained myself to do it since I'm a young man. For whatever the reason. So in that sense, I resonate with women, I think. And I'm proud to say that, incidentally. I have no shame. I'm ashamed of that I have senses and sensitivity. You know, some women just don't like big, strong men with tattoos who can beat everyone up. I mean, there are women who like the macho guy with tattoos who could beat everyone up. And then there are women who hate that kind of man. So, you know, there's a different struggle. Sorry. Different strokes for different folks. I'm sorry to use an old 60s phrase. There's all sorts of types, you know what I mean? With some women like the tattooed, muscle-bound guy. The others like the intelligent, intellectual type of guy, even a little nervous. I think all women like geniuses, incidentally. I'm not sure. I think women like entertaining men, I'll tell you that. That's for sure. But that's a separate topic, actually. It's an interesting topic. Tampa, Florida. Debbie, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk about the elderly with STDs. A few months back, I went to a bar in Naples, and there were like 80-year-old men that were trying to pick up like 50, 60-year-old women. There were women that had on spandex without bras, walking around. It was the most disgusting thing.
What do you mean? It was like a senior pickup bar in Naples, Florida?
I swear to Michael, it was absolutely bizarre. It was like,
no, I know that as a result of the Viagra type of drug, men are sexually active until they drop dead now.
Exactly.
And so, but the women generally lose interest in sex after a certain age. Where are they getting it for the drive from, do you think?
I have no idea. All I know is that there were 80-year-old men that were coming up to me, and I'm in my 50s. I look nice. I'm very married. But it was disgusting. All these, there was a woman there. She had a shirt on with no bra. I mean, a woman after, 50 really needs a bra. Really needs a bra.
Yeah, I can't comment on that. I agree with you, though.
It was terrible. And I thought to myself, these people, I mean, have they not learned about AIDS? Have they not read the paper?
I think a guy at 80 figures, even if he gets a disease, he'll probably outlive the disease.
Maybe that's the comment.
I mean, between hair transplants and tooth implants and Viagra, what's to stop a guy today?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And the women are worse than the men.
Oh, well, maybe they're just enjoying the new sexual freedoms of America, where there's no morality and everything's amoral. And they want to be, maybe they want to have what they didn't have when they were young.
I don't know.
Let's take it out of the context of morality, okay? And let's just say they're doing it. Older people are now having more sex and there's more STDs. Is that necessarily a bad thing that a person has some excitement in their life? I mean, why should that be seen in a negative light necessarily?
Because because I think that there's something about aging gracefully.
What should they be doing? I mean, working for the ACLU, putting postage stamps on liberal mailers? I mean, what should they be doing? I mean, what does a man 80 do other than run after women?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is the quintessential sound of America when I was a child. That kind of southern, tough, thin southern guy who can break your face. You know what I'm saying? You looked at him the wrong way. Nice guy, but don't push him around. Don't underestimate him just because he's thin. Another kind of world. Take a look at the world today. Take a look at the world from the top to the bottom, the world you're living in. It's a better world, right? So we got the quake, nothing with nothing. The whole world went into a hissy fit. They fainted. The media went into hysterics. Hysterics. Not a brick fell. No one was hurt, but they covered it as though the world, the city fell. It was Pompeii all over again. To ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox News, it was Pompeii. Even though not a brick fell out of anywhere. I think they released all the government workers, right? They do nothing anyway. They told them to go home early. 5.8 mag quake rocks D.C., New York City. They shut down JFK. They shut down D.C., Homeland Security went into FBI, Secret Service. Everybody went into overdrive. And thank God nothing happened. But the nation is a nation of hysterics, a nation of hysterics. And here we are. Not me, though. I didn't get hysterical. First of all, I lived through the earthquake here. Big deal. My house shook in every dimension back in the Loma Prieta earthquake here in California. And that's not a fun experience when it moves in six dimensions at once. and a close friend was in the 27th, 28th floor of a big high-rise in San Francisco. The whole building shook. But you don't go panicky over it. So here we are. What else is in the news? Well, Medicare may pay for STD screenings for seniors is a big topic. I also described a dream I had of, I suspect I was being pulled into the next world, but I wouldn't go. But a female figure was pulled into that world I wouldn't follow. I screamed, no, 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 I'm going to stay here. I want to be here with my children. And I had dream interpreters calling the show if you just tuned in. Now, for comic relief, we have something for your listening pleasure. As you know, I have difficulty with General Electric not paying any taxes on their U.S. income and nobody in the media talking about it. It gets me sick. And when you see these people talking about the Tea Party being the real enemy and they don't say one word about General Electric getting away with murder. Murder. Moving an X-ray plant to China, a plant that had been in Ohio for, I think, 120 years. Prior to the X-ray business, it was something else. And GE not paying any taxes because they hired ex-IRS agents to rewrite the codes for them. And then I see that NBC is owned by General Electric and that there's nothing but a fountainhead of lies for Obama. And MSNBC is sort of the mini-me of NBC, a little mini fountainhead of lies that almost no one watches except people inside the beltway. And that they hire a street vermin like Al Sharpton, a fake reverend, a man who was a hustler, a man who was involved with smearing Detective Pagonis with the lies about Tawana Brawley, is hired by these people, and the man can't speak a whole sentence in the English language, and he's still on television. Listen to clip 19 and tell me I'm wrong.
If she only fully litigated two cases, how did she get all that inside dirty the IRS is doing that she needed to know to defeat them?
This is a broadcaster from Edward R. Murrow to Al Sharpton. This is astounding. I mean, how can we live in a country like this? You talk about a cultural meltdown. This is, to me, the epitome of the cultural meltdown. I could see a liberal who's literate. I could see a college graduate, a master's degree, somebody with education whose politics I disagree with. But to have a man whose mind is so jumbled with the language doesn't even come out right because he's been all his life hustling people with threats and marches and gangs. Now he's on television with a show. Won't last, obviously. But to show you what happens when the government media complex is allowed to function like this. This is what happens. This is how it happens. And don't think I'm jealous. I don't want a show. I would not do television for any amount of money. I don't care what the money was. I would never do television again. You can write that down. Make me a liar because you'll never see me doing television again. I might appear on a show. Might, and I say might with a capital M. I might appear. I remember there's another genius that they hired with the British accent who won't last very long. The one whose head got shaved. What's his name? Bashir? He wrote me for 3 months straight when I was banned in the UK, begging me to come on Nightline, which he was running at the time. And he tried to pose as a nice, reasonable guy. And I knew his background was a dirt merchant, a smear artist, a muckraker of the lowest order. And every instinct in me said, don't go on the show. You don't need the publicity that badly. And he was writing these nice emails. You don't know how they bait you. He even talked about one of his illnesses to show me what a nice, you know, vulnerable guy he was. I swear to God, I have sympathy for you, Dr. Savage. I'll treat you fairly. Well, my better judgment was don't go on his show. I watch him on TV now. I know he's, you know, one of the girls is all I can put it to you that way. When I say one of the girls, I mean one of the sorority, okay? One of the sorority that's undermining America. Anything decent about this country, they hate. Anything productive, they suspect. So I didn't go on that show. No, I don't want a television show, but I'm shocked that they would hire a street rat like him and give him a show. A guy involved with the Freddy's Fashion Mart fire, where deaths occurred, and smearing Detective Pagonis. Is there no bottom to which Jeff Immelt will go in order to support Obama to get contracts, is a question. Then, of course, elderly STDs is somewhat tied to this discussion in some way. I don't know exactly how. There's some relationship between STDs and the elderly and NBC. I can't yet make the connection. Jeff in New York on WOR. What are you calling about, Jeff? Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
How are you? Yes, you mentioned Broward County. You gave some statistics about Florida. I didn't hear if you mentioned Palm Beach at all.
No.
Did you mention Palm Beach? Let me tell you.
No, the STDs were calculated in the Miami area.
Oh, no, they go all the way up. They go, I'll tell you, they're in Boca. my mother's a nurse. She just retired. She's looking at property down there. I used to live in Boca. So
right.
I know some areas, did some entertainment business. You know, used to go around to these places and put on a little show for the elderly. They dance.
Right.
Some of the stuff I would see, I would actually watch people hooking up in front of me. And at first I thought I had to rub my eyes. I thought at first I was seeing things. But after a while, I'm like, holy cow, these people are hooking up. They're actually going.
Oh, wait, you mean like really elderly people, like 80-ish?
I'm talking about 80s, but good 80s. I mean, my mentors, I'm hoping. I mean.
Well, look, you mean a guy 80, but he's with a woman. How old is he meeting in there? Like, how old is she?
Women were 60, 70. The guy had to be maybe 85, 80. I'm not talking like 60, 70. I'm talking 80.
Well, look, but the thing is this. What have they got to lose at that point? If they're not married, who are they hurting, right?
And I think it's a great thing in life to be able to go out, but be safe.
That's what I'm saying, but who are they hurting? That's the point. Who are they hurting if they're not married, they're not cheating on anyone? Why should that be condemned?
That's right, but my mom, she's scared now. She doesn't want to move down because she saw that they're going to be all over me. Mom, so you go somewhere else. So I don't know. She wants to go somewhere else.
Is your mother a widow?
My mother is divorced for 20 years, retired nurse. And, you know,
yeah.
She's a tough cookie. She doesn't take any stuff, but you know what?
Does she go out? Has she gone out with other men since the divorce?
She's dated, but she's, you know, she still loves pop. You know what I mean?
My mother, may she rest in peace. My father died when I was very young. She never dated another man her whole life. That was the way it was done in the old days. It didn't seem to hurt her. She lived to 88. She didn't have to have sex in order to live to 88. I mean, this is all part of the liberal philosophy, is that you must let it all hang out in order to have a good, healthy life. I mean, it's another way to look at it. Repression also works.
That's right. But, yeah, these little communities, I mean, I'll tell you, if you did some research.
I was just in Boca. I didn't see these 65-year-olds, 75-year-olds running around. Where? What are you talking about? Where? Like on Atlantic Avenue? Delray Beach?
No, that's Delray Beach. Listen, Boca shuts down.
Delray Beach is all younger people mainly, and then a lot of, like, would-be Sopranos types with the gold chains trying to sit outside and make it believe they're on a TV series.
Yeah, I hate that. I'd rather hang out at home.
Don't you hate that they sit there with the big gi, with the chain on, with the family, like there's somebody important. Back home, they're probably a guy, you know, an ordinary guy. They go to Florida right away. Give me the gratisura, you know, that kind of thing. The whole show is put on.
Right. They want to show everybody they're from New York. They want to, you know.
Yeah. The bare chest with the chain, with the shoes with no socks. And meanwhile, they're in foreclosure back in Passaic.
Cars being repoed, right? And you know what?
Women, yeah, the car itself was probably repoed, and then they fled to Florida in it. Oh, you know, I got to tell you a funny story. I was in Delray, so there's a guy, you talk about elderly, I swear to God, he's a singer who does a shtick of Rod Stewart, but he looks like him. He's an old Scottishman. So he entertains. I couldn't believe how good he is. I watched this guy. I sat in this outdoor bar for over 2 hours. He was singing, and he does stand-up comedy in the middle of singing. He didn't get off the stage for over 2 hours. And I was watching him with astonishment because Aiken Carey, he has a great voice. He does Rod Stewart, but his lines are so sharp and fast. I was the only one who was digging them and laughing. So I watched the guy, and I couldn't understand where he gets his energy from. And he says this. He's up there, and the guy must be, I don't know, 65-ish. Thin Scottish guy, drinks like a fish in alky, and he's drinking from under like a cup or a bottle, and the wife is sitting at an adjoining table, and his one-liners is better than Henny Youngman. So he says, well, people are wondering why I don't take any breaks, how I can keep going on. He says, you know, 20 years ago, we used to take a break every 20 minutes to go out into the parking lot to shoot smack in a car. He says, but those days are over. He said, I'm just a wino right now. He said, and what are you going to do anyway if you're a wino? You're going to sit in the parking lot and drink and talk. So I'd rather stay up here on the stage and drink and talk. What a line. I mean, where does this guy get it from? I didn't know where his energy came from. So when the show was over, like before when I was leaving, I threw him a very big tip. I'll tell you the truth. I threw him a $100 bill, and I think he was pretty amazed. I put it in his hat, and his wife gave me his card and all of that because I intended this. I was going to have him on the show, actually. I don't know where the card is. I forgot it already. The guy was amazing. But when I see an entertainer like that, which is very, very rare, and that kind of energy, you know, what is he working for? Next to nothing in a, you know, junkie bar on a strip there in Florida, right?
Right.
So, but what I'm saying is I didn't see any older people picking anyone up there.
You were in Delray. You weren't down in Boca. You come down to Boca. See, what happens is at 7 o'clock, even 6:30, it's shut down. Okay? They have the early bird special. They're gone. They're out of Dodge.
Oh yeah, they steal the sweet and low and the ketchup, the packages of ketchup.
When you go and there's no Splendors, you know there was an early bird.
Oh, absolutely. They clean out the Splendors. They clean out the salt and peppers. It's lucky there's any cutlery left on the table when they get through. It's like locusts hit from Brooklyn down there. What do you think they're going in with winter coats on? Would they have special pockets inside for like taking home the Splendor? You know, I tell you something funny. When I drive on Federal Highway in Florida, I don't know if many people listening to this, if they even go there, they know the area. It's pretty well known, especially from people from the East Coast and New York. Well, even actually the Southeast, they all go down there. And I drive down Federal Highway at night. I have never seen so many Italian restaurants and deserted malls in my life. You could drive for 2 miles. In every mall, you see an Italian restaurant with no one in it. And I say, man, the U.S. government is in so many witness protection restaurants. How many Italian restaurants can they open in one town, I ask myself? Sure. I mean, who runs them for the U.S. government?
That's what you see. You see car dealerships and Italian restaurants on the Federal Highway.
No, but in my fantasy, they're all witness protection restaurants. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't. Maybe it's just guys from New York who have nothing to do, so they open a restaurant, so they put their mother in there. What do I really know? But I myself eat in a certain Cuban restaurant, and that's about it. All right, thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, you're going to hear people now in churches or, you know, down in the, Pentecostal, you know, the Jimmy Carter, they're going to say that it's God's wrath against the Tea Party, that the quake was felt because the Tea Party held up the great man from expanding government to help the poor. So God struck America. That's coming, I'm sure, in the, where they wave snakes and drink strychnine, you know, those kind of churches. The Jimmy Carter division of Christianity. Shut JFK, they shut... I'm all alone. I mean, I'm alone with the dog. They left. The family went. They're on the way. They're going. It's amazing. I should have gone, actually. See, it was a no-win. If I went, then I'd be miserable and make them unhappy because I don't like to travel. If I stay here, I know I'm going to get lonely and wish I should have gone. It's just modern man. You can't win no matter what you do. Don't you understand? Rita in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, Ringo and George recorded a Yellow Submarine song after they spent a holiday in Sardinia.
Oh, stop it. I don't believe what you just said.
It's true. My mother's from Sardinia. I always look for things from Sardinia. And there I go. 2 months ago, I read Ringo spent a holiday in Sardinia. And
I don't believe it. And I saw my dream, and I didn't know any of that. I never listened to the Beatles. My subconscious picks up, we all live in a Yellow Submarine, and then I have that weird dream?
Yes.
Holy God, maybe I should become a fortune teller.
Well,
so what is Sardinia like, Rita? Am I missing something by not having gone?
It's beautiful. The north part is probably where you're going to go. That's gorgeous, really high-priced, and beautiful sea. And then the south is very poor, and it's a nightmare. But it's interesting. The most beautiful food you ever eat is there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Look, Sardinia is a really basically a free region of Italy, correct? But the food is different than Italian? It's a different food cuisine than Italy?
Very different. Very different.
How? What is Sardinian food? It's mainly seafood, I would imagine, right?
Oh, the most beautiful dishes are seafood. Octopus dish, the best.
Yeah, and I like octopus. They're a high-energy food. I eat a lot of squid, but that's an interesting story. Do you eat a lot of goat cheese in Sardinia?
Yes, lots of cheeses. The best Parmesan cheese comes from there.
See, I can't eat Parmesan, but I do like goat cheese. Anything with goaty. Well, they're flying in and they're meeting a friend's private yacht. They're going to go to the best areas of the world over there. I should have gone, but then I'd get trapped on the boat. You know, whatever it is, okay? Then all the women with the puffy lips, with the no bathing suits walking around. I mean, that's a temptation. Who needs that?
Well, if you want to go to the south, they're all dressed in black.
Oh, you see, I should have gone there. That's where I should have gone. Like, when I was in Mallorca, the women all wore these black cars. That I like. A full cloak.
Savage.
You Here's a little news for you. After the head of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, called for austerity measures, UN staffers gave themselves a pay raise. What you may not know is that the new income hike in the United Nations means that the highest-ranked officials at the UN, including members of the audience that Ban harangued last March, get a take-home tax-free package of about $240,000 a year, tax-free. They pay no income tax at all. Last year, the same UN workers would have earned about $235,000. That's about one-fifth higher than the gross pay of the highest-level officials of the United States government, including federal cabinet officers who earn a max of $199.7 before deductions and taxes. But remember, U.S. officials still pay taxes, which reduce their pay on federal taxes alone by about another 21%. UN leeches pay no tax whatsoever. They take home, as I said, about $240,000 a year. They pay no taxes at all. According to the United Nations, the new cost of living hike affects 3,000 out of 6,000 staffers working at its New York headquarters, or about 48% of the total number of leeches working at the UN. That's the story. A spokesman for Ban's office justified the hike by declaring that it was the first post-adjustment that UN officials have gotten since 2008. So they're very hard working at the UN. You got to understand that. I mean, keeping track of the best little houses of ill repute in New York or in Europe, you know, and finding ways to finagle a trip there and get it paid for. It's a hard job when you think about it. You know, ploys like that are not easy to come by. You have to be very clever as a UN worker in order to justify, let's say, a trip to Brussels to engage in some kind of child sex and then call it some kind of research. As you well know, the UN is a very important organization. Important, we don't know why, but we know it's important. And they occupy a very big building on New York's East Side. They do exactly what nobody knows. But, as I say, we're glad to see that they gave themselves a raise, tax-free package of about $240,000 a year. Just wanted to give you a little update. Tennessee Jack, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I call to convince you that you should send me the Abuse of Power to preview. I spent 36 years in the politically correct arena of secondary education. I've been retired for 14 years. And my main entertainment now is reading novels. I probably read at least two a week unless I get a real long one. But I do
all
that.
Right, I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power. Stay on the line. Bagel, send that over to whoever, however we get it, to me, and I'll send it to the publisher. There's a great review of Abuse of Power, incidentally, up on michaelsavage.com by Dr. Jack Sarfati. If you want to hear a review, I mean, he's a physicist. He is a friend of mine. I'll disclose that. However, I have other friends who would never have written a review like this because, A, they're incapable of it, and, you know, plain English. I mean, let me read you just a short review. Abuse of Power Review. It held me spellbound. I remember Dr. Sarfati has a PhD in physics, and here's what he wrote. Short paragraph or two. He says, I seldom read a book cover to cover these days, especially an action novel in the James Bond genre. Abuse of Power by Michael Savage held me spellbound. I read it in two sittings. It would have been one sitting, but it was too late at night. I finished it the next day. There is never a dull moment in the story. It's like the series 24 on steroids. Just as one cliffhanger happens, and you think you can take a breath and relax, another one happens. It's almost too much excitement, adrenaline pumping. When I got to the last chapters, I did not want it to end. The book is well-crafted, with multidimensional characters and a very coherent plot line. I look forward to the motion picture. Go to my website and read the review yourself and pre-order it to make sure you get a copy. You know, it's coming out September 13th. He suggests, by the way, that Kiefer Sutherland play Jack Hatfield. Of course, I have nothing to do with that. I mean, I own film rights to it, incidentally. I should tell you that. I reserved all film rights. You should know that. But I know how Hollywood works a little bit about it. Now, even if my agent sells it to Hollywood, which will happen once it's a bestseller, they're waiting for the, you know. The author has almost no input whatsoever, and I don't expect to impose myself upon them. The only caveat is that the character in the book named Eddie, the 10-pound poodle, must be played by Teddy, and I will be Teddy's agent. I will take my full 15% for Teddy's appearance in Abuse of Power, where he plays Eddie the Poodle. So it's a really good book. I'm very proud of it. And if Jack Hatfield takes off as a fiction character, that is what I will be doing. probably in Sardinia for the rest of my life. No. You know, there are people who just write novels like this, these fast-paced thriller novels. They make, I never believe the amount of money I heard that they make. If a book like this clicks, but what are you going to, I mean, it's not, it's an exciting book, okay? It's all about terrorism, journalism, patriotism. Just how far up does the abuse of power reach? You'll see. And there are, you know, there are characters in it that you may recognize, like a corrupt senator. You'll find out, you'll figure out who that is. Then there's a corrupt billionaire who smeared Jack Hatfield, who controls the media by buying reporters. His name is Soren. No, by the way, no resemblance to any person living or dead in my book nor on this show. No resemblance whatsoever. So there's a lot of politics in it, even though I kept it to a minimum because you could slow a story down if you're writing fiction and you beat people up. I really kept it to an, you know, it's like, it's smooth. It's not like, oh, a diatribe to set it up so I could write political statements. I wouldn't have done that. It wouldn't have worked. I write political books, nonfiction, so I'm getting ahead of myself. So what do you think about two black congresswomen saying the Tea Party is the enemy? Not that the Tea Party is wrong. Not that they disagree with the Tea Party. Not that the Tea Party is anti-Obama, but that the Tea Party is the enemy. What do you think about Maxine Waters stirring up her constituents saying to an all-black audience, the Tea Party is the... Play Maxine Waters. Listen to this. I want the people to hear it. You got that? Okay, pick it up. Then play Wilson now. Go ahead, play her.
While we discuss our very real concerns, let us all remember who the real enemy is. And the real enemy is the Tea Party.
Have you ever heard anyone in the conservative, on the conservative side, say that the enemy is, the real enemy is, and then fill in the blank? I'm not aware of it, by the way. I did write a book called The Enemy Within, but that was a more generic description of the enemy, which was a philosophical enemy rather than a specific enemy. I think these people who I'm listening to right now are going to start up a race war in this country. That's what I fear. You go to crowds like this, and you start telling them the real enemy is the Tea Party, what are you asking them to do? Go to a next Tea Party meeting and beat them up? Now, I think that anyone who says a thing like that in the political system should be arrested, frankly. I think they should be stripped of their job. Maybe I'm wrong. It is a free country, so if you want to stir up a race war, I guess you can do that, especially if you're a congresswoman and you're a sacred cow. You know what I'm saying? 1-800-449-8255. Rick in Sacramento, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Michael. You know, I'm really upset. I'm a Tea Party conservative, former Marine. I'm really upset with what these congresswomen are saying. The thing is that they promote the radicals that are overthrowing Libya and Syria and all these rebels, and they're being supported by the Muslim Brotherhood, and yet they claim that we Tea Party people are the enemy.
Yes, but you people are. The Tea Party in America is the middle class of America. So for Maxine Waters and this other one to be saying that you are the enemy, what does she mean by that? What does she want her constituents to do to you?
Well, isn't she aware that Hillary Clinton and John Kerry met secretly with the Muslim Brotherhood? So Obama's behind it, as you said, and Soros? This is the enemy.
And don't you remember that Hillary Clinton about 4 weeks ago came back glowing about Al Jazeera, saying it's real news as opposed to nasty talking heads in America who muddy the waters with opinion?
Oh, yes. And I just want to say Trickle of Poverty is excellent, and I suggest everybody read it. The truth is right there.
Well, thanks for your service to America. I really do appreciate it. 1-800-449. Okay, play the next one.
I'm not afraid of anybody. This is a tough game. You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
That's real classy. You know, that's something you'd expect from a congresswoman. Isn't that terrific? Stir the masses up. So the next time a Tea Party meeting occurs, what, they'd like their constituents to go beat them up, attack them with truncheons, like at a voting intimidation rally in Philadelphia that Eric Holder... See, if Eric Holder were a real independent attorney general, he would actually investigate comments like this coming from a congressperson, incidentally. That's what you'd expect in a democracy. And they would be taken to the woodshed and said, you know, what you said is not illegal, but it's not really part of the game here. We don't want you to say that again. But actually, they do want them to say it again. This administration does want them to say it again. Do you get it? 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Next caller in Salt Lake City is Michael. He's next up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. Appreciate it.
Go ahead.
I wanted to comment on the issue that you discussed with the elderly having more and more STDs, and I think it's a...
Right. You're a doctor, so what do you say it's a result of?
I think it's very clear. The past 10 years has been a huge move and use of growth hormones among the elderly. Okay, so if you're an elderly person and you take growth hormone, what does it do? It reverses your physiological age. Along with that becomes younger behaviors. Younger behaviors, you have more sex, you have increased STD rates. So it's pretty straightforward, and it's a growing business. Buddies of mine have left anesthesiology, aesthetic surgery to become these growth hormone doctors and anti-age doctors.
Mm-hmm. And what do you mean? They take growth hormone, and what does that do for them?
Oh, it doesn't. It's an amazing hormone. It's really the only. It's probably the closest thing to the fountain of youth that medicine is aware of. It's the largest.
But what does it do? It reverses aging?
It, in effect, it reverses aging. It decreases centripetal fat. It increases lean muscle mass. It decreases all sorts of fat. It increases mental clarity. Healing increases, especially bone injuries.
And what is it derived from, embryonic tissue?
No, it's synthesized. It's purely synthesized.
It's purely synthetic at this point.
Yep.
So what is the negative of human growth hormone? Are there negatives such as provoking any kind of carcinogenicity or what?
Not that they know of. That's the beauty of it. And that's why there's so much interest in it by physicians from a business point of view. You can take somebody who's suffering of typical age problems, augment them with growth hormone, maybe 5 microunits or rather international units, a day, and all of a sudden, this 70-year-old's acting like a 45-year-old. So it's very attractive, and there's little.
So if I took human growth hormone, I might be on the radio another 40 years.
You might.
No, that would be the curse of the liberals in America. Just when they thought I was out, just when they thought I was getting out, I got back in. I mean, they wouldn't know what hit them.
I think with your energy, you're headed there anyway. So.
Hey, let me ask you something. Has anyone found anything that can regenerate hair growth? Or because I read all of that. I mean, I don't really care one way or the other, but it'd be, you know, like I read olive oil promotes hair growth. That's not true, is it?
No, it's not true. The only effective way really now to get a good full head of hair if you're bald is transplant. But they are working with stem cell mechanisms. And I think in the next decade we'll have that.
Can you imagine in 10 more years what's going to be with the new generation of sexual enhancement drugs like the Viagra-based drug, the Levitra-based drug, that combined with a man looking like a gorilla with a full head of hair at age 80? Can you imagine what's going to go on in this country?
I can't imagine, no.
And all covered by Obamacare. That's the beauty of it.
There you go. They'll live longer.
There you go. I mean, what could be better? Obamacare is going to cover human growth hormone so that you can enjoy yourself till you're 100. Well, that's how they are in Cuba. They play dominoes. They don't care what the government does to them. All they do is play dominoes and drink coffee and have sex. What else is there to do when you have a corrupt government? All right, thanks. That's interesting. Human growth hormone. Human growth hormone. I have to look into that. I'll be right back. So, new national debt data for those of you on the Savage Nation. The national debt grew about $3 million a minute, even during Obama's golfing vacation in Martha's Vineyard. As my producer Beowulf just wrote, Obama putters while the economy sputters. Very good, Beowulf. 5.9 earthquake hits Virginia, jolts New York and Carolinas, that you know. What else is in the news? Nothing big deal. Famed surfboard designer hangs self, coroner says. Strauss Kahn a free man following court ruling. East braces for powerful Hurricane Irene. That's next now, earthquakes and tornadoes. Oh, boy. Man, it's this time of year. I mean, it's this time of year. I just left Florida. Thank God I left. But it's not going to hit Florida, right? It's going to hit like the Cape Fear area. Isn't that where it's going to hit? The central coast of the east? Isn't that what you get in late August? Aren't you supposed to get hurricanes in August? There's nothing new under the sun. Rebels are saying Gaddafi is the rat on the ground. After hours of gun battles, Libyan rebels capture compound of ruler Muammar Gaddafi, who remains in hiding. Oh, we're going to see Gaddafi was seen in London in a disco. Gaddafi was seen in a rug store in New York. Gaddafi was spotted in a car wash in Dearborn. Gaddafi was spotted running a delicatessen in San Francisco. Here's a sad story. I put it on my website yesterday. California kid, 4 years old, killed in a crosswalk by an illegal alien, a drunk. And you know what the killer here is? Not only that the boy is dead, a little four-year-old is walking across the street with his mother and his sister, and this illegal alien from Mexico hits them, kills the four-year-old boy, and drives away. And he gets caught. About 3 weeks before this, he was told not to drive because he had been stopped several times before. Here's another little related story for those of you who love illegal immigrants. Mexican trucks entering the United States cited for 1 million violations. Isn't NAFTA great? You got to thank George Bush for that. Mexican trucks entering the United States cited for 1 million violations. NAFTA's been a real winner for America. It's been a real winner. You got to understand what an important thing it is. The statistics obtained by Fox News Latino show that between the fiscal years of 07 and the first amendment, the state completed 1.2 million inspections at the El Paso state, blah, 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 blah. And one after another. One after another, violations, safety violations. Why did they open up these superhighways from Mexico to the U.S. with no inspection? What was the thinking there? You mean that we don't have enough drugs in the United States? There aren't enough illegal aliens coming in? It's beyond belief. Who's running this country? Don't blame Obama for this. This was pushed by Clinton and Bush. Obama's third in line on this in reality, okay? Guns, drugs, trucks. What do you mean they're not related? Even Obama and Calderon are discussing guns, drugs, and trucks. What does it take a genius to figure out if you can open up no inspection of trucks coming in, they're not going to carry a contraband? Who is behind all of this? Answer, the unknown. The unknown. The unknown. Read Abuse of Power. You'll see who's behind it. The same people who banned Michael Savage from England because he was speaking the truth about the New World Order are related to this. That's all. It's why we all live in a yellow submarine, so to speak. It's now a New World Order. One world. One world is all it is. We all live in a yellow submarine. It's a yellow submarine it's a yellow submarine of multiculturalism and of propaganda around the clock. That's what the yellow submarine is, you know? So the family went already. They flew. They're on a 380. They sent pictures from the airplane already with the, I can't believe it, like with an eye camera, whatever, iPhone. There they are in the plane with the sleeper seat. What a beautiful seat. My God, I'm jealous. Had I only known, I'd be asleep by now. If I had gone even an hour ago, I'd take off, I would have dropped a double beer and been asleep already. Then you wake up 3 hours later, you think you're there, and you got the shakes with 7 more hours to go. Then you start pacing the plane. I'm not one of those who would do anything. I don't need to be strapped down like that woman who runs that woman I told you about at the beginning of the show, that she has anxiety and this and that, so she went crazy, had to handcuff her to the seat. If you have anxiety and depression, what are you flying for? What is she flying for? If you know you have an anxiety attack. Yeah, all right, play it already, going out the window here. Well, Teddy's by my side. He's my loyal little buddy. He sleeps and he moans at night like a person. And he and I go to the next world in the evening, into the next universe together. He's my little spirit guide. Little Teddy, the spirit guide, and Michael Savage, back in a moment, right here on your local station.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, earthquake, big deal. Big deal. Largest earthquake in Washington history. No one died, thank God. Not a stone fell down, but the country went into lockdown. Everything closed down. JFK closed down. Dulles closed down. The Department of Homeland Security started to send out the FBI. They asked if Obama felt it on the golf course at Martha's Vineyard. We're still waiting to find out if the royal bigwig felt the quake while he was putting around in Martha's Vineyard.
We are getting some reports out of Washington that there may have been an earthquake in that area.
We are getting reports of a 5.8 earthquake, magnitude 5.8 earthquake in Washington, D.C.
Hundreds of people started streaming out and worried instantly that there was a bomb or some sort of attack.
I heard colleagues who had been here on 9/11 saying that's exactly the way it felt on 9/11 when the building was struck by Flight 77.
I'm on Capitol Hill and just felt an earthquake. There's alarms going off all around me now.
There was a lot of fear in those initial moments because they didn't know it was an earthquake.
I have no idea what country I'm living in anymore. I have never seen a country of sissies like this in my entire life. What was this close down? What it is the media scared everyone. The truth is it was a large earthquake, but nothing happened, right? The previously largest recorded earthquake in Washington was on July 16, 2010, and it was a 3.6. This is a 5.9. However, you should know that an earthquake in March of 1828 was felt throughout an entire northeastern district, including seven eastern states in the District of Columbia, and no damage occurred then. Although it was reported to be violent in D.C. and Baltimore, Maryland, John Quincy Adams, then president of the U.S., left the following account in his diary of the occurrence as he observed the shock at the White House. Well, I'm not going to read it to you. He went to his bedchamber. I guess that's the main thing. So, quake, quake, quake. The entire city closed down. All of D.C. leaves work at the same time. And frankly, I have more scorn for Washington, D.C. than ever before. And here's what's on michaelsavage.com, top right. No injuries, no damage, yet U.S. shuts airports and the media went hysterical. Top left, journalism, terrorism, patriotism. Just how far up the chain does the abuse of power reach? You want to read a free chapter of my new novel? You can click it right on my own website. You want a review of abuse of power? It held me spellbound. When I got to the last chapters, I did not want it to end, said Dr. Sarfati. Egypt, thank you very much, Obama. The Egyptian protesters are saying to Jews, the gas chambers are ready. The signs are bearing swastikas. Thank you, Brzezinski. Thank you, Brzezinski. Thank you, Obama. Thank you, Jimmy Carter. Maybe one day your dreams will come true. Libya intervention cost the U.S. about $1 billion. Obama administration says children are sexual beings. The HHS website run by perverts says homosexual tendencies are common. This is now who's running America. Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Now they're dancing in the streets, screaming Sharia for America. Biden is in China saying he won't second-guess Chinese on the killing of female children. Here's good news. FCC finally kills off fairness doctrine. Al-Qaeda linked to Israeli bus ambush. 8 Jews killed by up to 24 attackers, but that didn't make it to your local paper because they want you to believe that they're oppressed, the minority. Wall Street aristocracy got $1.2 trillion from the Fed. On the bottom of michaelsavage.com, Mexican illegal alien here in the Bay Area ran over and killed a little boy. The man who stole Buddy's life from us will one day be free, said the mother, but Buddy will be gone forever. The illegal have been told not to drive by the last judge. Isn't liberalism great? I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Some good writing. It's a popular novel. Don't get scared. Don't get frightened when I say book. I know many of you don't read. You just text. And you think that using your two thumbs makes you equal to Shakespeare. But before the two-thumb method, there was a thing called penmanship. Before the two-thumb message, there was a thing called books. Before the two-thumb message, there were movies based upon books. And the other night, I couldn't sleep. It was around 1 in the morning. I got up. And I watched a movie, and it was Prezi's Honor, which I had seen years ago and forgotten how good it was. And the reason I became fascinated again by Prezi's Honor is because it was written by probably one of the most, the finest novelists that I've ever read. In some ways, Richard Condon. Now, he wrote The Manchurian Candidate. He wrote Mile High, which I told you was about prohibition and how it was created. How prohibition had been created by a man who would then take over the rackets of the booze racket. He put in prohibition. How? By funding women's groups who wanted to ban alcohol. And once the alcohol became illegal, he was ready with the smuggling the alcohol. And it's an amazing book, very much like the drugs in America today. Who knows who's funding the anti-drug hysteria in America? What do we really think? Should things really change? Why do you think there's such a battle against legalizing drugs? I mean, I'm not in favor of drug usage. I think it's a curse and a scourge, and it's destroyed our country. But you're at a point where you don't know what's destroying it more, the number of people incarcerated, the amount of police we have watching everything we do, or the drugs themselves. So anyway, so he wrote the Manchurian Candidate. He wrote Mile High, and he also wrote Prezi's Honor. So I started to read. So I watched the movie about 30 minutes, but then I pick up the novel. I just happened to get the three of his books in the hardcover again. I had ordered them. And I start to read Prezi's Honor, and I found out that the movie was very true to the book. They copied almost the work. Richard Condon was actually one of the screenwriters for the movie, directed, by the way, by John Huston, one of his funny, while he was still living. And his daughter, Angelica Huston, was in it. Jack Nicholson, if you remember, was in that movie. Now, remember, 1985 is a long time ago. 85, 95, what was that? I do reversals and backwards now. So I say, 1985, why, that was just yesterday? So I said, wait a minute, what does that really mean? Well, put yourself in 1985 and say 25 years ago, that would be 1960. Impossible to believe. Okay, so I'm going to read you from the book, and I'm going to show you what good writing is. Just sitting in that hotel lobby under a shiny green balaboonal hat, which by itself could return millinery to a leading place in the arts, she had slowed down the lobby traffic, as Charlie could see from across the lobby, to minus 9 miles an hour. He studied everyone who was within sight of her in the room, pitying poor Paulie, and he imagined that he could see old men's eyes getting misty, room clerks and bystanders developing erections, and every woman who saw her realizing that she was doomed to hostile dreams that night. She had turned Charlie's legs to water just by sitting there when he came into the lobby. Now, that's the character, Jack Nicholson character. And the femme fatale was played by Kathleen Turner, who I didn't think was that fantastic, but Charlie Partan is apparently in love with her, right? Now, I want to read you one sentence when he falls in love with her. And he flies out to L.A. to meet this woman he fell in love with at a wedding, a mob wedding. And he meets her in L.A., and he's courting her now. He's totally in love with her, absolutely in love with her after one day. So they get into a car after a restaurant, and they drive up the Pacific Coast Highway. I'm going to read you one paragraph. I want to show you what writing can do. They drove to the ocean, then up the Pacific Coast Highway, and Charlie felt taller, better, greater, kinder, and smarter than he had ever felt in his life. Do you hear a sentence like this? I'm going to read it again. He's in love now. He's a gangster. He's a killer. And yet he's in love with this woman. They drove to the ocean, then up the Pacific Coast Highway, And Charlie felt taller, better, greater, kinder, and smarter than he had ever felt in his life. I thought that was an amazing sentence. I don't know if people could even write about love in that way anymore, what it does to a human heart. The illusion of love, because it's all an illusion, as you well know. Remember, I started by saying we're going to talk about illusions and allusions. So now we have the illusion of romantic love and what physiological and emotional effect it has on this character, which Charlie felt taller, better, greater, kinder, and smarter than he ever felt in his life. Now, maybe you remember those feelings from when you were 17. I don't know. Remember what it was like when a girl liked you and you liked her? Oh, my God. They say the man feels he can conquer the world. Yeah, well, click, click, 3 years later, get back to me on that one. How about when love leaves you? How about when the illusion leaves you? What happens to the man or to the woman when that illusion, that romantic illusion, leaves you? Well, we could spend a lot of time talking about what love is and what love isn't and how it was a rather recent phenomenon. It didn't even exist in biblical times. The whole concept of love is kind of a modernistic idea. There was no love in the ancient days, incidentally. Love, the idea of romantic love, as I understand it, is rather recent, last few hundred years. For most of mankind throughout history, marriage was based upon something other than love, other than romantic love. And you could joke and say based upon lust. Okay, fine. We know that's a given. But it was based basically on a contract between a man and a woman, sort of a business contract, to go into business together, the business of raising a family and building lives. That's what marriage really is at the end of the day. And depending upon your business partner, your business will either thrive. Well, your business partner and luck and circumstances, of course. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. Oh, there's another great line in here. I got to read this to you. Hold it. Hold it. Listen to this one. So we're talking about Prezi's honor. And what's the dedication in the front of the book? Listen to this. You're going to love this one. But dreadful is the mysterious power of fate. There is no deliverance from it by wealth or by war, by fenced city or dark sea-beaten ships from the book Antigone. Can you believe that? I'm going to read that to you again. Many of you think that you can lock out fate with money, or you can lock out fate with a guard or a security guard, or, you know, calling 911, or being surrounded by powerful people. But dreadful is the mysterious power of fate. There is no deliverance from it by wealth or by war, by fenced city or dark sea-beaten ships. How many of you have not experienced that in your life? How many of you want to call this show right now and tell me what fate has done to you when least expected? How's that for a show topic? And the phone number, you know, 1-800-449-8255. I'll read it once again. But dreadful is the mysterious power of fate. There is no deliverance from it by wealth or by war, by fenced city or dark sea-beaten ships from Antigone. How has fate influenced your life? When has fate entered your life and turned it from one form to another? From poor to rich, from rich to poor, from health to sickness, from marriage to divorce? You want to go into what fate did to you? Now, I tell you, we all know about fate. Remember I read the story when I wrote years ago? 2 years ago, was it already? Psychological Nudity, and I talked to you about the Leather Man. Many of you loved that story because it was so bittersweet. The father's friend, the Leather Man, who rose from the poverty of the Lower East Side where he didn't have a penny, and he became wealthier than my father did by going into a certain business which took off in the 1950s, and he moved to a much better house than we had. We lived in an attached house. He was able to move to a detached house, so to speak, out in Long Island, you know, with a lawn all around it as opposed to an attached wall. Now, that was considered much wealthier. While we had a used car, he had a new car. While we had a flat living room, he had a sunken living room. While we had a phonograph, he had a stereo. You get the picture, right? So things went on very well for him. Soon he had expanded the Leather Man. He had a chain of leather stores. And then lo and behold, as fate would have it, I go away. I go out on my own road. I travel to the Fiji Islands. I leave the entire kith and kin behind. I want to set out on my own road. I know if I stay in New York, I'd be dead within a short... I wouldn't be dead. My soul would be dead. I wouldn't have gotten anywhere in life. I just was not cut from the same cloth as my kin and kith. I wasn't. I was always different. I was always driven by other... Doesn't mean I'm better, okay? It means I'm different. It's as simple as that. So I had to follow my own star. Whatever the influences were, I knew I had to get out of New York, so I left in 67 or so, 68, And the rest was an astounding ride. What a roller coaster ride it's been. What I'm saying is, I come back from that road to the plant collecting, the Fiji, the Samoa, the Tahiti, the plant. And now I'm a man. I have a child. I'm married. I had left when I was still really a boy. And the Leatherman had been riding high. I come back a few years later. I am sitting in my living room. I think my father was dead. Or actually, to tell you the truth, I think I came back from my father's funeral. Truthfully, I mean, I don't remember. A lot of it's jumbled up in my head. And lo and behold, who's sitting there, shrunken up in the chair? The Leatherman, who, by the way, I'm not here to mock him. I love this man. I loved all of my father's friends. There wasn't one man in the entire circle that I didn't have a fondness for. I loved all of these guys. I loved all of my uncles. It was an amazing time. I don't know what's happened to the world. But I had a big heart for these people. They were all kindly, good guys. So anyway, he's sitting there, shrunken down. He was a heavy cigar smoker. Heavy cigar smoker. And he looks up at me, and his eyes are wandering. And he says, Michael, look what happened to me. Look what happened to me. I didn't know what happened to him. He says, I have nothing. I lost everything. And he wound up living at this point now with his children back in a relative's apartment in the slums of New York that he had left 30 years before. He lost his house. He lost his business. Everything. The fortunes had changed. Fate had changed. And here he was. His eyes were bewildered. He didn't know how this could happen to him. And he looked at me and he said, look what happened to me. Look what happened to me. Then he says this. Then he says, I wish God had only given me cancer instead of this. I said, don't say that. Well, lo and behold, he was dead within a year from brain cancer. That's an absolutely true story. It's in Psychological Nudity. It's an example of what fate is, and not tempting fate. And don't ask God for something because he's liable to hear you.
Savage.
Oh, look, we've talked endlessly about the candidates currently in the race for the White House. How boring can it get? Texas Governor Rick Perry has thrown his hat into the race. He's a good guy, and he's already considered by most to be one of the front runners, which he should be. Right away, the attacks from the left have begun. Joining us now is Dave Raboy, the communications director at the Center for Security Policy, to talk about these attacks. Dave Raboy, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
There are stories being pushed by the illiberal media linking Perry and an Islamic minority group. Is this a big deal?
Aga Khan is the spiritual leader of the Ismaili sect of Shia Muslims, and it's a very small sect that that has a long history. And but the Ismailis are primarily peaceful. They're involved in philanthropic work. There are maybe 5 to 10 million Ismaili Muslims in the world. So it puts them in a substantial minority in the Muslim world, and they have a history of being persecuted both by their fellow Shia and also by Sunnis, and they've become used to practicing their religion very privately, and they're probably the most prominent secular moderate Muslim group around. The Aga Khan and Rick Perry have been friends, apparently, for a number of years, and they've attended galas together and things like that. Perry has also partnered with the Aga Khan and the Ismailis because of the large the large number of Ismailis in Texas to help design a curriculum that that would address Islam. And the curriculum itself, however, is not exactly what you would call Sharia promoting or Islam friendly. It's pretty down the line. Actually, I defy anyone to look at the curriculum as I have, and tell me that it um, that is that it's promoting Islam.
I mean, what is this really about? Where did this relationship begin? Is it all necessarily bad?
A lot of people online have started ginning up this controversy, starting with Salon.com, and interestingly enough, a very liberal website in Texas, the Texas Independent, and they are trying to create a wedge between Americans that are really concerned about Sharia both here and abroad, and political Islam in general, with the conservative base. They're trying to create problems for Perry where really nothing exists, and I don't think this will be a major issue for Perry, considering, you know, who the Aga Khan is, and considering some of the other stances that that Perry has taken, for example, in regards to Israel, in which he's certainly pro-Israel. The other thing that's very interesting is that at first CARE, an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation trial, terrorist financing trial, the CARE representative in Texas was very upset that that Perry had this close relationship with the Aga Khan, because he was, you know, not reaching out to quote connected Muslim groups. You know, connected Muslim groups I think he was referring to, you know, Saudi influenced or Muslim Brotherhood connected groups. So that's a good thing. We had Obama and we had Bush both reaching out when they reached out to Muslim communities, Muslim organizations. They were reaching out to either Saudi or Muslim Brotherhood entities or both. And the fact that Perry is, has found the Aga Khan, who is as moderate of a Muslim organization, and the Ismailis are as moderate as you can possibly get. I mean, that's a great sign, and hopefully he'll be having dialogue with them as opposed to with the real bad guys, who are the Muslim Brotherhood and a lot of these U.S. groups.
What effect will this have on his candidacy for the White House?
I don't think it'll have any effect whatsoever, frankly, because the more people will look into this story, the more they realize, you know, wait a minute, this is a story that's being pushed by Salon.com and the Texas Independent, two organs that are, you know, that would love more than anything to have a dispute between, you know, different factions of the Republican Party and the conservative movement. They just want Perry to look bad, and I don't think we should take the bait. I'm not worried that Perry would allow Sharia law in the United States. Perry has when he was governor, he was supportive of a bill that would address the use of foreign law in the United States, and at that time he made a commitment that he was completely faithful to the Constitution and rejects the imposition of foreign law, or, you know, which would include Sharia, in our courts. So I think, and at the time, CARE in Texas was kind of pissed about that. So I think this is a manufactured story, and I hope it doesn't get much traction. I'll tell you, I'm not in the Perry camp. I've never met him. I have no dealings with him whatsoever, but I study this issue all day. I think we have to work here to try to cool all of our heels and not rush to judgment on something that there's just not much there.
Well, why is some still hammering him on this?
I think they're worried about it because they just don't have that much information on who the Ismailis are, who the Aga Khan is, and how that relates to the political Islam, the political movement, and that is threatening us, you know, both here and abroad. This is not the Muslim Brotherhood, it's incumbent upon us, I think, to learn about all of these groups and to understand and distinguish between them, and to make a leap. One piece called "Rick Perry, the Fifth Column Candidate," is just irresponsible, and it's just not serious.
So, do you think this proves that the left feels that Perry is a truly viable candidate?
It's possible that this whole thing by Salon was a gambit to try to stir up the conservative movement and force Perry through the media at some later date to embrace leaders of prominent American Muslim organizations that are actually the bad guys. So rather than embracing the good guys, which he did, he should not be forced to embrace the bad guys, you know, and if we're talking about CARE and the Islamic Society of North America and the Muslim Public Affairs Council and a lot of these unindicted co-conspirators from the Holy Land trial that have ties to Hamas. Both the left and the media, which I guess I repeat myself, are completely terrified, and they're throwing everything they have. We've seen in recent days they've been throwing everything they have at Perry, and we should expect them to continue, but we should not do their work for them, and we should not jump on this crazy train and accuse Perry of being, you know, a stealth jihad candidate or something else that's silly. If he gets stuff wrong, we should speak to him about it and try to educate him. But you know, he's not Barack Obama.
Dave Raboy, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on, Michael. It was great talking to you. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
The reason the rich support Obama is because they think that they can control him and bring about a shrinking of the middle class and a new Soviet America where there will be the ruling class and the peasants, of which they will be the ruling class, and he will be continue to be their friend, colleague, and puppet. What they don't understand is that Obama's smarter than they are, much like a certain Austrian was originally used by the Krupp Steel Corporation and other large manufacturers in Germany who thought that they could manipulate this charismatic young man who was running around Germany raising so much interest in politics, and they thought that they could put him in power, this young man from Austria, and eventually manipulate him. Little did they know that he was using them. They weren't using him. I have studied Hitler's rise from the time he was a mere corporal in World War I, and somewhat of a war hero, by the way, and how when the National Socialists first emerged on the scene in Germany, which, remember, was a democracy during the Weimar Republic, how he was in bed with all the industrialists. The rich of the country loved him. The rich liked what they were hearing. The rich loved it. You didn't know that Hitler was a back-to-nature man, did you? Many of you don't even know. You're so ignorant of history, I can't blame you. I blame the education system. He was a vegetarian. He didn't drink. He was a back-to-nature movement guy. But more than that, he was anti-capitalist, so they thought. The socialists who were aligned with Hitler, the National Socialists, were against private property and ownership, but Hitler didn't go for that right away. As a matter of fact, it led to a big fight within the Nazi Party itself. Soon after Hitler aggrandized a great deal of power to himself and established his dictatorship, his original thugs, his supporters, the brown shirts, and the Ernst Röhm, the street fighter, and he had a big fight because Ernst Röhm was a diehard socialist, and they fought. And he said to Hitler, how could you be doing business with all these capitalists when we are supposed to be such pure socialists? But Hitler was far smarter than Ernst Röhm. He knew that he continued to need the big capitalists to advance the Nazi agenda. And so he never outright attacked the big capitalists. He worked with them. So Ernst Röhm and the other diehard socialists in the SA, the brown shirts, rebelled. As a result, they were exterminated in the Night of the Long Knives, which you should study one day. When Hitler's SS lay in wait for the SA, who were in a male bacchanalia on a certain lake in Germany with each other. The SA, as you see, were oriented in that direction. Study it, it's historical. And the SA leadership were having fun with their boyfriends on a certain lake in Bavaria. The SS lay in wait for them, killed most of them, arrested some of the others, including Ernst Röhm, who was later executed. It's a fact of history. I'm not embroidering. I'm not inventing. I'm giving you a fact of history. What does it have to do with Obama? Everything and nothing. Everything, because it's quite telling to study how Hitler rose to power using, although he said he was a socialist, he used the capitalist to get to power. Okay? And his socialist buddies were very mad at him because he didn't impose his socialism fast enough, so he had them killed. But then, of course, after he had total power, there was another story, which we're not going to have to give you a whole history lesson right now. And I don't really cover this in my book. I touch on it, but it's irrelevant. What's relevant to this discussion is Obama's Marxist socialist roots and why I define him as not a socialist. That's baby talk. You've heard the word, hey, Obama's a socialist. It doesn't mean anything anymore. When I was talking about socialism radio 10 years ago, nobody had used the word in talk radio that I know of. Nobody had used it. They didn't even know what the word meant. Then all of a sudden, they were all, oh, socialist. Well, there are quite a number of varieties of socialist. You have to define what you're talking about. This nation has been somewhat socialist since the 1960s. Okay? So what variety of it? How virulent is this socialism? I define Obama as a pan-Leninist. That's something you haven't heard about. The golfer doesn't know what the word means. If you say pan-Leninist to the golfer, he'd have to look it up because he hasn't seen it anywhere. If you said it to a wall banger, he would get embarrassed and angry and fire somebody. If you said it to the leprechaun, he propped the phrase pan-Leninist to understand it. And then you'll understand Obama when he says, we didn't do this just to elect a man. So I want you to play that whole soundbite now, and you'll understand what I mean when I say pan-Leninist if you listen to that soundbite again.
If you are out there knocking on doors and making phone calls, talking to your friends and neighbors, if you do not give up hope, then I guarantee you that not only are we going to win this election, because this was never just about putting a president in the White House, it was about building a movement for change that lasted for a long time. We will build
building a movement for change that lasts a long time. Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. Now, does that definitively prove he's a pan-Leninist? Of course not. But he certainly gives away an intimation of what I am talking about, and the rest you have to, study to get to the bottom of it. So when you look at the adulation of one-third of the population that gave Hitler the power in Germany, and you hear what I just said? The adulation of one-third of the population that brought Hitler to power, and you look at the adulation of the one-third of the American population that brought Obama to power, you say, well, all right, that doesn't prove anything either, does it? You got to understand that most Germans did not even go along with the crude imagery of the early Nazi party. They didn't even like the anti-Semitism of the early Nazi movement at all. They would like to have a complete and total socialist revolution in America, where masses of people were taken out, put into re-education camps, worked to death, and then executed, along the lines of the Red Brigades in Cambodia, or the red communist Chinese in China. This is very serious business that we're talking about. You got to understand this. The misery that is felt by society today is directly related to the pacifism that is rampant in our military today, the internationalism that is rampant in our political class today. and the rot that has set in Washington. You understand what I'm saying to you? I don't have to go into a tirade right now to make my point. I don't have to do that at all. We know that the decayed old political system in America is cracking right now. We know that we have to build a new America built on the fundamental values that built America. We know we have to build America based on the basis of achievement, strength, will, struggle, freeing the genius of the individual personality. But you don't hear any of this rhetoric coming from any of the politicians, do you? You hear it in crude form, but not really in the way I just put it to you. How can the strength of the nation be improved is the question. Do you think Obama can rescue the common strength of the nation? I don't. I think that he has ruined the nation in the 2 years he's been in power. And I believe the only thing that can save America will be to select the best Americans irrespective of their race or their sex or their sexual orientation based on their achievement, their strength, their will, their ability to struggle, their ability to work, so we can free the genius of the individual personality. That's what we need in America. And the only way we can do that in order to increase the material value of the individual is to increase the moral and spiritual value of the individual first. The moral and the spiritual value of the individual has almost died in this country. Has almost died in this country. That is why we have such social misery, such anxiety, and such division in this country.
Savage.